In Isaiah chapter 40, I'd like to begin by reading verses 27 through 31, and I want us to talk a little bit about waiting on the Lord, because that's what these scriptures encourage us to do. In verse 27 of Isaiah 40, it says, "Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God?" What that means is that the people are discouraged. The people feel like God is far away, that he's not paying attention to them. He is not aware of their circumstances. We've all been there. I trust we'll be there again. But notice what the prophet says, what God says to this. He says, "Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding." It's important for us to remember that while we may get tired, God does not get tired. And while we may overlook things, God does not overlook things. God knows exactly what's going on with you, and we can take comfort in that. But we can do something else. We can draw strength from him, because that's what he gives us. "He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increaseth strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall." I wish I had the energy that I did when I was 18, or when I was 3, or, you know, or 5, right? You get tired. And as you get older, you get more tired. And you don't just get physically tired, you get weary. Okay? And that's how it is. But aren't you glad that our walk with God does not depend upon our own strength? In fact, it's when we're weak, that's when we are strong. Because watch this. "They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. But they that wait upon the Lord." So it begs the question, what does it mean to wait upon the Lord, and how do you do it? Because I will tell you, I sometimes feel just exactly like these scriptures. Sometimes I feel like God is far away. Sometimes I feel incredibly weary, incredibly tired. I don't know what to do. And yet it just says, if you'll wait upon the Lord, he'll strengthen you. So I think you'll all agree with me that this is an important statement. And it's a statement that we're all familiar with. This isn't the only place in the Bible where this appears, obviously. But what does it mean? Well, it's interesting to me. When we look at the scriptures, waiting on the Lord, in our modern parlance, we might think that means like we're going to just passively sit and wait for God to do something. You know, wait. You know, we wait for a bus. You know, we wait our time in line, you know, that sort of, okay, we're going to sit here and wait. But that's not what it means from a biblical standpoint. To wait upon the Lord is very, very active. Okay. It's a very active thing. We are actively trusting, and we are using our faith to wait, as in we are expecting him to bless us. We are actively engaging ourselves in looking to the Lord, because when you're waiting upon the Lord, you're looking to the Lord. You're watching for him to act. And you know, you recognize that it's his timetable and it's his power and it's his goodness. You agree that his plan is better than ours. We ask for his will, but we are actively seeking. We are actively trusting. We're actively praying. We're actively hoping. And that's what is dealt with in the 27th Psalm. Another psalm that we have enjoyed and shared a lot recently with. I hope that you read this on frequent occasion. It's a psalm of David. And the whole psalm, 14 verses, what this psalm is about is waiting on the Lord. He's encouraging himself to wait on the Lord. Now, when you think about David, we know more about David in the Bible than anybody else other than Jesus Christ, because the whole Bible is about Jesus And David is a great example of the Lord Jesus. But you'll know that here's a man who is after God's own heart. He's a man who, in many ways, God is using to teach us about the Lord. He's a very important role to play. And so you'd think, if you're applying man's logic to it, well, he must have had a really, really cushy life. He must have had a really, really enjoyable life. And if you know anything about the Bible, you know that that's not the case at all, right? He was ordained. He was anointed by the prophet Samuel when he was a very young man, maybe 10 or 12, something like that. Certainly not any older than that. We know that when he was maybe 15 or 16, he defeats the giant Goliath. I mean, we know those things, but you got to remember that he spent the next 12, 13 years, under suspicion from Saul, under persecution by Saul. So much so that he had to spend about 10 years or so running for his life, hiding in the hills. You know, he was being chased all over the place by Saul. You know, he had all sorts of problems. He was hungry. He was thirsty. He had people betray him. He had all manner of difficulties. And so do you. And you see, the experience is what the Bible teaches us, what God is teaching us through the Bible. The reason he gives us all of these stories and lessons about people's lives who really lived, he said, look, this is how you find me. This is how life is. And there's a meaning to this. There's purpose to this, because the most important thing is our walk with God and our perception of him and our realization of who he is. And there's just some lessons that you can only learn by experience. And whether it's good or bad, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to understand that. But the things that they go through in the Bible teach us. And I would dare say that David wrote this psalm because of the experiences that he'd gone through. There are things about his experiences, though they were unpleasant, though they were difficult, though they required him to be patient. There were times when he you know, cried all night and through real sorrow. Nevertheless, we see the hand of God on David teaching him, and look at the lessons that he learned. As I said, how to wait upon the Lord. Well, the first thing that David teaches us to do is to trust God. If you want to wait upon the Lord, if you want to be strengthened with the strength of the Lord, you want to walk with that, then we need to trust him. So what does he say? The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? You fear God, you don't need to fear anybody else. You trust God and you just let things happen. We spend a lot of our energy and our time trying to make things right around us, and that's good. I mean, we ought to live lives that are pleasing unto God and so on. But if you spend too much time trying to solve it yourself, you're not really trusting God, are you? I can make this right. I can do this. You're not really trusting God. What David had learned is that he couldn't do it. He had to have God lead him and guide him and trust him. And there's a certain confidence that comes from that. That if I'm really trusting God and I believe I'm walking in his will, who can I be afraid of? You know, who are you afraid of? What issues in your life are things that cause you great concern? You're not waiting on the Lord. You need to trust him and put it into his hands, because it's where it is. And let him bring forth. He says, he's the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? He says, when the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. It wasn't by David's cunning that he was able to escape the hand of Saul. In fact, there were twice whenever God delivered Saul into his hands and he refused to take it. He could have killed Saul and ended his pain, and he chose not to. And he says, I can't lay my hands upon the anointed. Saul was anointed of God. He was a man chosen of God. I can't lay my hand against him. I have to trust God. But what David learned after many repetitions of this lesson, okay, which is what God is doing in your life as well, you will learn to trust him. And you will just say, all right, I'm going to do the very best that I can. I'm going to do what I think God has told me to do, and I'm going to trust him, and I'm not going to be afraid. Proverbs 16:7 has helped me probably more than any other proverb. It says that when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies at peace with him. And what that means is that God has the power to make every other relationship in your life better. So instead of trying to fix everything on your own, David didn't go to Saul and try to work this out. Let's just sit down and fix this. No, you work on your relationship with God. You work on that one relationship with Jesus Christ. He'll make every other relationship in your life better. That's what David learned, right? I will trust in the Lord. My enemies come after me, but they stumbled and fell, not by my cunning, but because God was in control. That's why I trust him. And that's what it means waiting upon the Lord. It's not passive. It's active. You tell yourself, I'm going to trust God, and he's going to see me through. And his way is the best. Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. There were times when David was afraid. There was times whenever he does. There will be times when you are. But if you will remember, though a host comes against me, God has saved me in the past. He's gotten me out of all manner of really difficult situations. That was his hand. He did it in his time. I look back on that. I am confident. I trust that he will again. I'm going to wait upon the Lord, actively trusting him, actively seeking him. Because that's the next verses. You don't just trust him. This is not a thing where you trust God and you hold him at arm's length. You seek him. You seek his face. You pursue him. Okay, because that's what David did. Verse 4, one thing have I desired of the Lord that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble, he will hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And verse 6, and now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies about me, round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. A lot of God's people today in this culture do not value the benefit or see the benefit of public worship. They simply do not. Sunday is the day to sleep in. Sunday is the day to do laundry. Sunday is the day to go to the lake. Sunday is the one day that I've got off to do this. I've heard that many a time. I'm not criticizing anybody in particular, but I want you to see that they're not seeking the Lord. They don't understand that you go to church and you are with God's people and you seek God because that's where you get the rest. You don't get rest by having another hour of sleep in the bed. You get rest by seeking the Lord, by seeking his face. You praise him. You're lifted up in song. You desire to do the things that bring honor and glory to him. Half the problems in our culture and in our nation would be solved if God's people would just go to church. And that's the truth. Because if they sincerely were seeking the Lord and seeking his favor and seeking just some peace, the world offers all this peace and it doesn't offer it. It doesn't work. If you'll just buy this product or go to this event or do this thing or listen to this music or go see this movie or go whatever. That's the world trying to give you what God offers us and what is available to all of us and every one of God's children is rest by seeking him. But you must seek him. So waiting on the Lord is not sitting around being passive. You actively seek him. And that's what David did. And that's where he found his rest. And the third thing is prayer. Now, prayer is a lot like seeking, but prayer is where you are actually engaging the Lord and crying out to him, and you are talking to him one-on-one. Prayer is so important. Well, I know everybody here has a good prayer life, and everybody here could have a better prayer life. It's something that we need to continue to work on. When I say a good prayer life, I don't mean someone who can lead prayer effectively, which all of you men can, and I appreciate that. It helps. The more practice, the better, right? But this is this attitude of prayer where you are talking to the Lord and you are mindful of him and you have a running conversation going on with him. That's what David did. Let me read. I'm going to have to read the rest of the Psalm. 7 verses. Hang on, but it'll be worth it. Notice what David says. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me. And answer me. When thou saidst, seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, my face, Lord, will I seek. And you primarily find him in his word. You spend time reading the Bible every day. It's not optional. It's mandatory. You must pick up the Word of God and read something in it every day, and you seek God's face every day. Believe me, if you'll do this, God will bless you. He'll strengthen you. He'll give you, your life will be changed. The Bible calls this salvation. I mean, that's what it is, deliverance. And God is ready to bless his people if we just turn to him. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. Now, just because I'm encouraging you to pray to God doesn't mean that every single day it's going to be sunshine and unicorns and lollipops. This is not a formula, right? There are times, and there's times in my life when I cry out to God and he doesn't seem to be there. Well, I don't panic. I just keep talking. I read the Bible sometimes and it looks like Chinese. I don't know what this is. I've never seen this before. You know what I do? I keep reading. Because God would have us seek him. God would have us engage him. He's teaching us to keep going even when we don't feel like it. Think about Job. Job didn't see the Lord for several months. He was in a very low place, right? Was God far away? No, God was right there. Was this mean on the part of God? No, it was a great favor on the part of God. He was teaching him things. And, you know, when you look in the Bible, pretty much everybody you can think of waited upon the Lord in some form or fashion, some way. David did, right? But Abraham and Sarah, they had to wait to have a child. Jacob had to wait, right? You know, he thought his son was dead for 30 some odd years. Joseph was in prison for 13 years and he had to wait. Moses had to spend 40 years on the backside of the desert. What I'm saying is that, and there's examples in the New Testament as well. The point is not so much the period of time until deliverance. That's not what I'm saying. God may deliver you quickly. He may, you know, it may be years. That's not what waiting upon the Lord is. What waiting upon the Lord is this seeking and trusting and relying upon him and praying to him. It's what you're doing right now. And when he's ready, when you do it that way, you don't care. You don't care whenever he brings us home, right? That's the difference. That's what David here is focusing upon. So when he says, hide not thy face far from me, put not thy servant away in anger, when thou hast been my help, leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. He's not going to. But what David is saying is that I want to, and I'm going to continue to seek your face until I feel you. I'm going to continue wrestling with you until I find you, right? And that's what the Lord would have us do. He says, when my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. And that's because God is faithful. He's not going to abandon you. He's not going to leave you. He's not going to leave you alone. Okay? But you should seek him. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Show me what to do. That's why you talk to him. You talk to him and you say, Lord, what should I do? What? Show me the path and he'll show it to you. Deliver me not over the will of mine enemies unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me and such as breathe out cruelty. He had real problems, but God brought real solution. He brought real salvation to David. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage. Wait on him. How do you wait him? You seek him. You trust him. You pray to him. You talk to him. You don't collapse like a cheap suit if you're suddenly not sensing his presence. You know he's not going to leave you. You know, and having that Christ-centered view of life is waiting upon the Lord. And it's so joyful. How many parables did Jesus give us that involved waiting? You know, I think of how many, so many of them did. So, you know, there's a man who went away to a far country and he entrusted his servants with talents, and some did good, some did not. You know, the five faithful virgins and the five foolish virgins, what are they doing? They're waiting for the time, you know? All of these parables that the Lord Jesus gave, especially towards the end, were with this idea of waiting for the Lord. And if you think about the church, really that's what we're supposed to be doing. In a broader context, the church as it moves through time, as people come into it and then go out and they move on and go on home, and it comes along and it continues until we're looking for, we're waiting for the second coming, right? I mean, that's the whole orientation of our life. And Jesus gives the parable of the man who's the watchman. And he says, you know, the master of the house goes away and he commands his servants to watch and pray. And he says, what happens if they don't watch? They get drunk and they beat the other servants and they misbehave. Well, he's going to come when they don't expect him to, right? You know? So watching and praying and waiting upon the Lord is central to the Christian faith. And it's central to the Old Testament as well. Another example I can give you is Habakkuk, which I particularly like as an example. The prophet Habakkuk was a man who was a prophet probably about 630 BC or so, about 20 years before the 20 years before the Babylonians came and carried away captive all of the nation of Judah. They ransacked Jerusalem. And in the book of Habakkuk, we find, which I can find, it's here somewhere. I know it's near Zechariah. It's two in front of Zechariah. That's why I dog-eared these. Here it is. It's in front of Zephaniah. That's it. I was almost there. That was the problem. Give me just a second, guys. There's 12 of them. I'm going to find it. But Habakkuk is really interesting. Here it is. Habakkuk is really interesting because Habakkuk is experiencing disappointment and discouragement because he's seeing the nation filled with a lot of unbelief, a lot of sin. You know, this is, like I said, this is about 20 years before the Babylonians came in, Nebuchadnezzar came in. And what Habakkuk is doing is he's saying, Lord, why don't you do something? You know, if you think about how dark and evil it was in the land of Judah in that time frame, how wicked it was and how hopeless it seemed, there were probably very few true worshipers around. It's not like you know, masses of people, you know, attended to the worship at the temple, that there was a lot of people that you could look to as a fellow believer and trust in God. He probably felt pretty lonely. He probably felt pretty isolated. And so when you think about the prophet Habakkuk, what he cries out to God, which is right, it's appropriate. That's what you do. David taught us that. You cry out to God. But notice what he says. He says, Lord, there's all sorts of injustice going on in our culture. There's people are sinning and they're getting away with it, and people are pretending to be religious and they're not, and people are cheating their brother, and people are committing crimes, and there's so much lawlessness. It's awful. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry? This is verse 2. This is verse 2 of Habakkuk chapter 1. How long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear, even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? Why is all this going on around us? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are they that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous. Therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. That's not wrong for Habakkuk to be praying for his nation. It's not bad at all, right? But what's funny about this story, when I say funny, I mean I think it's interesting and enlightening and important for us to observe, is that God said, I'm going to solve it. But the way I'm going to solve it is going to make your ears ring. Okay? All right? I'm going to solve this problem. But the way I'm going to solve this problem is I'm going to bring in the Babylonians, and they're going to put down all this sin. And Habakkuk said, whoa, Lord, wait. No, I mean, that's a bad idea, Lord. Don't do that, right? This is the answer that the Lord gave. Behold ye among the heathen and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days, which ye will not believe, though it be told to you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. And he goes on and on. He says, you know who the Chaldeans are. You know who the Babylonians are. He's saying, Habakkuk, you know those guys. Of all the wicked people that are all around the nation, they're the worst. I'm bringing them in to clean house. Okay. Behold both the goodness and the severity of God. That is really, really harsh. But everything that God does is right and good, ultimately. Okay? This was a righteous judgment. This was a harsh judgment upon the nation of Israel. It's not the only one that God did. But notice what Habakkuk does. What I want to focus upon. Remember, we're talking about waiting upon the Lord. Going to God with your complaints is good. And discovering his will, and that's good. But notice what Habakkuk says. Habakkuk says, oh, Lord, no. This is not the right solution. The Chaldeans, the Babylonians, they are so wicked. They're so disgusting. You can't have any dealings with them. You can't. Your eyes are too pure to behold such people. See, it went against. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord thy God, mine Holy One? We shall not die. You're not going to do that. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment. And Almighty God, thou hast established them for gracious. Those people are what? Those are the people that you ought to be punishing. Not us with them. And you see, waiting upon the Lord. He's really not trusting. He's not trusting God, is he? I mean, he's a good guy. Habakkuk's a good guy. He's very, very understandable. But sometimes God is going to do stuff in our lives that we don't understand. Things that seem to be not even remotely fair or right or just. It seems contrary completely to the way things ought to be. But if we're waiting on the Lord, as biblically defined, that means that we're trusting him and we're seeking him and we're praying to him and we're waiting on him and we're watching, and whatever he wants to do is fine. That's a hard place to get to, right? But that's what Habakkuk learned. Because when Habakkuk pushed back, God answered his first question right away. But when Habakkuk started to kind of argue with the Lord and push back, God was silent. God didn't answer. So think about that sometimes. There's no formula here. But if you're not really seeking the Lord, if you're not getting an answer from the Lord, maybe you're not aligned with him. Maybe you're not really seeking him. You see, the Lord, He withholds the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Right? That's James says that. And if we're not careful, we need to examine ourselves and search our hearts and say, you know, what kind of spirit am I of? I'm just going to throw that out there. That's free. Okay. No extra for that. But then notice what Habakkuk does. He says, all right. I overstepped my bounds. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I got a little hot headed. He says, I'm going to go sit in my watchtower and I'm going to wait. Chapter 2. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower, and I will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I'm reproved. Okay. He'd been kind of humbled a little bit, you know, and so was Job. Job was humbled a little bit, you know, by his enduring what he had to endure. None of us want to go through that. But we can see the hand of God through it. We can see that. And God is teaching us to wait upon him. God is teaching us to watch and to seek him and to be content. That's what Paul says in the book of Philippians, right? He says, I've learned in whatsoever state I am to be content. I've learned that. How did you learn that, Paul? I went through a lot of troubles. I went through a lot of problems. I went through a lot of times where I cried out to God like Habakkuk did. Remember when Paul he talks about this in the 12th chapter of the book of 2 Corinthians, where he says that I was once caught up into heaven itself, and I saw some things that were unlawful to utter. I was so caught up in the glory that God sent a messenger of Satan to buffet me. And I prayed three times to the Lord to have that removed from me. Okay. And the Lord said, no, I will not remove it from you because my grace is sufficient for thee. So what Paul had learned, what Habakkuk learned, what David learned, what everybody that we read about learned was that in our weakness, in our waiting, in our patiently, actively seeking him, God brings his deliverance. Paul said, I've learned that when I'm weak, then I'm strong. I will therefore more gladly glory in mine infirmities, in my weakness, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Right? That's where Paul was. He writes to the same Philippians in chapter 1 of Philippians, and he says that for me to die is Christ and to live is gain. I'd rather go on to home and be with the Lord, but it's more needful for me to be here with you. That's where God would have every one of us, to be absolutely content, to be in a place where we know God is the Lord. And we trust him and we seek him and we're walking with him. We're walking in a way that pleases him and we're pleasing one another and we're just joyful. That doesn't mean we're not going through sorrow. Doesn't mean we're not going through stress. But we are in a place where we know that God would have us be. And God would have us live that way. And in the Bible, that is called waiting on the Lord. That's called waiting on the Lord. And if we could truly wait on him, we would, on the one hand, say, Lord, come today. Man, I'm ready to go. But at the same time, if it's 1,000 years, you know what? Your grace is sufficient for me today. Right? That's what this is about. And that's where I want to go to these final verses that I have also been sharing with people. And these are found in the 24th chapter of the book of Acts. A little bit different context. We'll set that aside. It's a really fascinating story. But in the 24th chapter of the book of Acts, again, Paul is talking about how he serves God. And he serves God by waiting on him, by waiting upon him, by being content. He has this presence of just whatever happens, happens. You know, that's what he told his friends as he was heading to Jerusalem. You know, the Holy Spirit was saying, you're going to be imprisoned. Bad things are going to happen to you, Paul. He said, I don't care. I don't care if I die. I want to do what the Lord wants me to do. That was Paul. That's where Paul got. And it takes experience to get there. And God is dealing with you. If your life seems harsh, it's because God is dealing with you. He's showing an extra special dose of love to you because he is drawing you closer to his son, Jesus. And that there's nothing better than that. So here's Acts 24. Paul says to Felix, the governor there, he says, all this stuff that these guys said that I did in Jerusalem is all a bunch of hogwash. They can't prove any of that. But he says, I will confess something to you, but this I confess unto thee. This is verse 14 of Acts 24. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. And herein do I exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. What's he saying? He's saying, you know, he's being opposed by certain Jewish leaders who are blinded to the Old Testament and they do not see Jesus Christ on every page as he is displayed. He says, I am doing nothing other than serving God, the God of my fathers. I'm serving God just the same way that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did. Their worship back in the very beginning, before the law ever came along, was a very Christ-centered worship. It was a worship of the Messiah. God had promised a Messiah, and that's who has been revealed through Jesus Christ. I'm doing nothing other than worshiping the God of my fathers. And that's what we do. And that's why the Old Testament is a Christian book. It's not a Jewish book. It's a Christian book, right? The Jews are blind to it. Don't ask a Jew to explain the Old Testament to you, because they're blind. They don't understand. It's a Christian book. It's teaching us about Jesus Christ. Abraham rejoiced to see Jesus Christ. He saw him on Mount Moriah. He saw that. Okay. What we've been given is even greater. And notice what he says, that ultimately there's going to be a resurrection from the dead. This same Jesus who's been crucified and taken him into heaven is coming back someday, soon, hopefully. He's going to set everything right. And there's going to be a resurrection. And he says, because of that, I exercise myself to live a life and that my conscience is good toward God and toward man. I wait upon the Lord and I seek to serve him every moment of my life. And whatever circumstances I find myself in, I trust that God will see me through and he'll be with me whatever I go through. So let's wait upon the Lord. Thank you for your kind attention and God bless you.